We have reached the 17th pick in the Amateur Hour podcast mock draft. I'm Brian Gibberman here with Sam Vecini, and we are joined by Frank Madden. Frank, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you very much. All right, and now brewhoop.com would be the correct place to go and find Frank Madden, part of the SB Nation network, and they do a great job covering the Bucks. Had Eric Boynen on not too long ago for the Bucks first round preview, which seems like such a long time ago. Were you happy with this season? Did it? I asked the same question to the Celtics. I guess it's appropriate for all the teams in the East. Preference was making the playoffs over being in the lottery again?
Well, I guess it's all in the context of how you get there, right? I mean, you know, it was a weird season, obviously. I mean, with Jabari getting hurt, I think you'd always rather hit the reset button, given what that happened as far as, you know, if you could have the season over again. But I think given the circumstances, you know, it's hard to not feel pretty good about what happened with the team. And, you know, not just with making progress, but I think just where the franchise was a little over a year ago with, you know, they were coming in with the sale of the team and, you know, a lot of hope that the franchise's, you know, both image as well as reality on the court could be turned around. And obviously everything that's happened, you know, has kind of worked out pretty well, barring really the Jabari injury, which, you know, obviously was a huge blow. So I think it was a really fun season, especially after, you know, watching them, you know, lose 67 games the previous year. And, you know, I think some fans are, you know, certainly still concerned, hey man, you know, maybe we needed to have another bad season, get another, you know, top five pick to really have the ammo to go someplace in the future as far as contending goes. But, you know, I think in the grand scheme of things, you know, seeing Giannis, you know, make big strides, seeing Chris Middleton obviously make strides, you know, Brandon Knight as well before he was traded, and you know, I'm sure we'll talk about Michael Carter-Williams and what he might bring, but you know, it was kind of a combination. Obviously, the veterans were important last year as well, which, you know, isn't exactly how you want to win a lot of games when you're a young rebuilding team. You don't want to be doing it on the strength of veterans, but I think, you know, the chemistry around the team was very good. I think it's very obvious, you know, who the future of the franchise is, and you know, certainly there's also some opportunities here to kind of tweak the roster a bit going forward, and you know, certainly maybe. You know, especially a guy like Gerson Olisoa, for instance, maybe move a guy like that who played well but maybe doesn't have a long-term future with the team. So it should be a really interesting summer. They'll have cap space. You know, they're not picking, obviously, as high as you might like to see them, but obviously that came with some good reasons.
Outside of potential trades, there's really only two question marks on the roster this summer about who could potentially be back or not be back. It's two wing players in Jared Dudley and Chris Middleton. What do you see happening this summer with those two guys?
Well, I think Middleton, you know, who knows if some team's going to give him a crazy offer sheet. You know, I mean, it's kind of hard to figure out, you know, given all the moving parts with the cap going up and obviously a lot of teams having cap space. Also a lot of, you know, potentially interesting players hitting free agency. So I think, you know, hopefully from a Bucks perspective, the fact that, you know, people expect them to bring him back and expect them to match any offer sheet means that, you know, he maybe won't get as much interest as he probably would otherwise deserve. So it'll be a really interesting dynamic. I mean, you know, I would, if I'm the Bucks, I mean, I'm looking at my cap sheet right now. You know, if he walked, you'd be, I think, you know, 11, 12 million under the cap minimum. So you've got to spend, you know, money some way, or you're just going to give it away, right? So I don't see any reason not to re-sign him for anything he gets. You know, I mean, the max would be 4 years, around $67 million. I mean, that's way overpaying for Chris Middleton. But, you know, given their cap sheet moving forward and the flexibility they have, you know, I don't think that even that would dissuade me from matching an offer from Middleton. So, you know, I would hope that maybe they can get him for, you know, I mean, I've said if I'm the Bucks, I would probably offer him, you know, 4 years, let's say $9 million a year, something like that, make him the highest paid player on the team, you know, set him for life. But, you know, we'll certainly see how things go. His qualifying offer is a little under $3 million, and he's only made, you know, less than $1 million a year for his first 3 seasons. So, you know, he may not have the same willingness to take a qualifying offer than some other guys. So I would certainly expect him back, and, you know, maybe more expensive than people would like to see, but I think just it makes sense. And then as far as Dudley goes, you know, I mean, he was a great addition. I mean, you talk about, you know, a great trade, you know, getting a first-round pick, albeit a protected Clippers pick in 2017, maybe not the highest value first-round pick, but getting a pick to take a guy that, you know, became a great locker room presence, a valuable on-court rotation figure. And then, you know, you're giving up Miroslav Radulic and Carlos Delfino. I mean, they actually, I think, saved money initially when they made that trade last year. So that was definitely, you know, a lemons to lemonade type situation for them. And he said he would like to come back. I think the team would like to bring him back. You know, his player option, his last year of the deal is $4.25 million, excuse me. And he can opt out of that. I think he'd probably end up somewhere in the same range as maybe on a multi-year deal, which, you know, I think would be fair, and hopefully he'd be able to come back as well. And then, you know, as you said, you've got a pretty similar team, with the exception that, depending how the timing works out on signing Middleton, you could have a really big slug of cash to work with in free agency, and then obviously you're adding another number 17 pick and the number 46.
Question. Jason Kidd and the rest of this coaching staff, really, because I'm pretty sure one of the assistants kind of came up with their defensive scheme, but awesome coaching staff or incredibly awesome coaching staff?
Well, I think when you look at the roster they had, you know, after last season, you know, I really kind of felt like, man, you know, looking around the rest of the league, if you know, other than maybe the Sixers last year, if you've got a great coaching staff and you know you have the right mix of guys, you know, regardless of your overall talent level, it just seems like, you know, if you hit things right and you have good coaching, you could probably win 35 games in the East, you know, regardless of what team you have. And so I think that also makes me a little wary of expecting some huge leap again next year from this roster. But I think when you look at what, you know, Sean Sweeney, who's sort of the defensive coordinator or mastermind, I could say, after what he did last year, you know, they did obviously a tremendous job. And, you know, it was funny last summer in Vegas, you know, this was right after all the Jason Kidd shenanigans went down, and so a lot of people were obviously kind of, you know, nervous about how that happened and how it was going to work out. And, you know, I was talking to some people who, you know, had knew the Nets organization pretty well, and, you know, they said, you know, not just Kidd, but this coaching staff, they're just a huge upgrade from what the Bucks had the previous year with Larry Drew and the staff that he had. So, you know, obviously that proved correct. And, you know, I mean, I've been joking that, you know, we need to make a plaque for Sean Sweeney that he, you know, got a top five defense out of a roster that featured Ersan Ilyasova and Zaza Pachulia as a starting 4-5. So hopefully they can keep it up. And it's funny because, you know, now that makes me kind of greedy, because now I'm looking at kind of free agent centers. You know, now it's like, oh, we don't need a rim protector to be a great defense. Look what they did last year. So that certainly also changes things, but we'll see. I mean, hopefully it's a sustainable thing. Hopefully the system, you know, isn't going to prove a little fluky, but they obviously did a tremendous job.
How do you think that Jabari Parker fits into this roster going forward? You know, we did just talk about that defensive scheme, and he's not a terrible defender, in my opinion. I think that the Duke scheme kind of holds a lot of people back defensively. I think we're seeing Okafor a little bit. I don't even think that Winslow is getting the defensive credit that he should be getting this coming draft. And so it's a situation where Parker is not known as the best defender yet, but he might have some potential there, and plus he obviously has an awesome amount of offensive potential. So where are you with him and how he fits here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very comfortable with the idea of sort of the Giannis Jabari forward combination. And, you know, I think going into last season, I thought he was probably, you know, going to be the nominal power forward. But, you know, after seeing Giannis and, you know, his ability, especially, you know, late in game, I mean, I think of the Miami game where he was basically the guy defending Chris Bosh. And, you know, when he gets after it, I mean, he can be a very, very good defender, even as a man defender. I don't think of Giannis as like a great, you know, lockdown man defender at this point. But but there are times when, you know, Carmelo, Bosh, you know, these guys who, you know, it's like he really gets up for it, and you know, he gets really aggressive, and he can do some really good things. So I think, you know, Giannis, given his size, you know, I mean, he's 6'11". If he goes from, you know, 220 to 230, you know, he's a guy that I think can defend most power forwards in this league. You know, I think that combination, I mean, you're always going to have issues when you face, you know, the Zach Randolphs of the world at the four. But I think the way the game is evolving, I'm pretty happy with the idea of that combo. I think Jabari specifically, I think he really struggled at times early last year. I think, you know, as a help defender, he was kind of a complete zero. You know, and he obviously, you know, can stand to use some additional strength. And you know, been hearing some good things about, you know, him working on his body while he's been coming back from the ACL injury. But, you know, until we see it, obviously it's tough to bank on too much. But I think the two of them can probably, you know, handle it most nights, and the mismatches they create on the other end, I think, you know, it gives you a kind of a net positive. I think the one thing that I was actually impressed by Jabari, he showed actually pretty good anticipation getting into passing lanes. You know, they obviously did a lot of fronting because of his lack of size and the way that they, you know, like to front guys and then bring help on from the weak side in terms of guys posting up. So I think there, you know, there, you can see there are like signs that, yeah, Jabari can be maybe a competent NBA defender. I don't know if he's ever going to be a good rebounder for a power forward. But I think when you put him with Giannis and you look at it kind of in the grand scheme of, you know, offense and defense, I think you've got enough there that you can be comfortable with that pairing kind of going forward.
How does Michael Carter-Williams fit into all this?
that's a very, very good question. You know, I'm hopeful that Michael Carter-Williams can fit into this. You know, I think, you know, certainly Bucks fans have, you know, groused over his lack of shooting and, you know, the challenges. And obviously many guys can improve their shooting, but, you know, he's 23 years old. He doesn't have a history of being a great free throw shooter. He doesn't have a history of being a great mid-range shooter. You know, there are a lot of reasons to think that he's never going to be certainly a good three-point shooter, a good perimeter shooter. So, you know, my hope is, you know, a year ago, obviously he had shoulder surgery. He didn't basically pick up a ball all summer, so he didn't really get to work on it last summer. My hope is this summer being healthy, you know, maybe they can work with him and see some improvements. But still, I mean, you're not really expecting him to be more than just, you know, maybe he's a low 30s three-point shooter at his peak, a guy who can, you know, kind of vaguely keep the defense honest at times. So it's hard. I mean, I think there were, you know, he had some issues making the transition when he came over. You know, they ran a lot of stuff in the post for him. You know, kid loves just going to mismatches over and over again, and that's probably where he had his best success. He had some really nice performances last couple weeks of the season. So I think he probably makes you play, you know, certainly a weirder offensive style than many people would like. That just is different from your traditional NBA point guard. So, you know, I'm resigned that we're going to have to see at least, you know, one more year just to see how it works. I'm worried that his lack of shooting, especially with Giannis and Jabari, if those guys don't become, you know, kind of good perimeter shooters, that could certainly be a long-term issue as far as fit and looking at that core. But, you know, we'll see. Obviously, defensively, you know, his size and the fact that they can switch pretty much everything with him and Middleton, Giannis, Jabari, that's obviously a unique thing that's really key to their defense. So I'll say I'm hopeful, maybe not as far as go saying I'm optimistic, but, you know, it's weird. The starting lineup they had at the end of last season was ridiculously good, and I think they were like plus 9 points per 100 the last couple months of the season. So for some reason that lineup worked with Ilyasova, Pachulia, Giannis, Middleton, and Carter Williams, and you know, hopefully it had something to do with Carter Williams and not just Ersan and Zaza playing really well.
Two-part follow-up there. Would have you preferred to invest the money in Knight long-term? Or would have you rather have gotten the Lakers pick than Michael Carter Williams for him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the time, I was thinking of it in terms of, you know, you may very well have the max Knight. You know, I was not expecting that you'd get Knight for, you know, 10 or 11 million a year or something like that. My guess was that he was going to go into the summer expecting a max deal, and, you know, you might get into a Bledsoe type situation where he's, you know, basically just hunkered down even if he doesn't get an offer sheet from someone. So I think, you know, I think Knight is probably a better basketball player than, let's say, Chris Middleton. I think in the system the Bucks run, you know, you can argue Middleton is just as important or more important because of his size and his shooting and the way that complements Giannis and Jabari kind of looking ahead. So I mean, they could have signed both, you know, but I think I get why they did what they did because, you know, again, you kind of reset the clock on having to make a decision on your point guard with getting MCW, having 2 years left on his rookie deal. And I think the big question is, you know, do they use that cap space this summer to sign somebody else? You know, I mean, if you sign a center that, you know, can add a lot of incremental value versus what you'd have with Henson and Pachulia, then, you know, you can certainly make the case that that's a a net win for the Bucks, because you know then you wouldn't have had that money if you'd re-signed Knight. So I think that's probably the last kind of piece of the would you rather have kept Knight versus trading for Carter Williams. I think the interesting question, I think, with the Lakers pick, you know, I will of course tell you that I was thrilled when the Sixers did not get the pick this year, because you know certainly I think it would have led to a lot of soul searching, even if the odds were always against that happening. Because, yeah, I mean, certainly I get why the Sixers would have wanted to move Carter Williams for a pick that, you know, very well would be in the lottery. So I think, you know, I look at it two ways. I think, you know, sitting in my living room, I would have been happy to see the Bucks get, a likely lottery pick for the next 2 years. I think from a pragmatic standpoint, from, you know, an organizational standpoint, I can also understand why they felt like they had to get somebody that could help them in the next 2 years. I maybe don't agree on how optimistic they are on Carter Williams, but you know I can certainly see the rationale for doing that and the concern with taking a huge step back immediately for the benefit of getting another lottery pick next year.
Does it feel like to you that this roster is kind of ripe for a trade?
Yeah,
they just have a lot of depth. It seems like you have guys like OJ Mayo, Pachulia. I mean, I would guess that Dudley probably opts in, wouldn't you think? I mean, we kind of talked about that already, unless he just wants to go out and get a longer-term deal for less money. You have Jared Bayless, even some of the younger guys, like, you know, a John Henson, like an Ersan, even though Ersan's probably 27, 28 at this point, like a Miles Plumlee. Like, there's a lot of overlapping pieces, it seems like.
Yeah, I think I would absolutely agree. I mean, I think you've got a lot of sort of nickels and dimes lying around the roster. And, you know, obviously everybody goes into draft season, you know, dreaming that you can turn some of those nickels and dimes into a quarter or whatever. You can, you know, use those to package up and move up into the draft. You know, I personally, looking at the roster kind of long-term and from a bid standpoint, you know, hey, I would love to see the Bucks somehow move up and take a Miles Turner or a Frank Kaminsky. Realistically, that, you know, I can't remember the last time that the Bucks moved up in the draft. It might have been the year that they got Tractor Trailer for number six, it's one of those things. I'm not counting on that. I would love to see them try to do that. I think, you know, when you look at the roster and some of the guys whose values are probably, you know, relatively high right now versus the way they fit into the long-term picture, I think Ersan's probably the obvious guy, just because, you know, I mean, he was playing well as kind of a bench guy behind Jabari last year. And, you know, I mean, I think he was probably a more valuable player than Jabari was last year, but you know, he shot the line. He was 43% from deep. He was putting up, I think, 15-7 or something like that after the All-Star break. You know, he's definitely a guy that I think it would probably be good to see if you can move him for something of value right now. Because, yeah, I mean, looking forward, I mean, you know, Jabari and Giannis are the future of power forward. You know, the best lineup they had last year was the Dudley, Giannis, Knight, Middleton, Henson lineup, where they were going, you know, super small at the forward spots. So, you know, I think especially if you bring back Dudley, and, you know, depending on what they do in this draft, if they get another bigger guy in the draft, you know, I think Bobby Portis is a guy that I like a lot. I think if they got another bigger guy in the draft, you know, you look at Jabari coming back, Giannis coming back, I think you just say, man, there's really not much room in this lineup for Ersan anymore. And then, you know, he's obviously, his contract's going to be non-guaranteed after next season, but, you know, now might be the best time to move him for some, you know, to some place. You know, some team has to want to stretch four, I would think. But
yeah,
whether they're willing to give up much forward, I don't know. So I think Ersan's probably the number one guy. I think Henson's another guy who's been, you know, kind of frustrating because he's obviously talented. You know, he's kind of struggled to make much progress offensively in his three seasons in the NBA. He's probably the only Buck who really played better against the Bulls than he did in the regular season. Pretty much everybody else kind of stunk against the Bulls. So maybe he has some surplus value, especially given that he's going to be a restricted free agent after this coming season. So I think Henson and Ersan might be the guys that I would, you know, shop most aggressively, especially if you ended up getting a big guy in the draft.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me too. I just wonder if someone like Phoenix might want Ersan, like you kind of mentioned, like if you could do Ersan and 17 for 13 and maybe like a smaller piece, because Ersan's contract has a lot of value. I think it's 7.9. He's, I don't know if it's a bargain, but it's certainly what he's worth, which is more than you can say for a lot of what upcoming free agents will likely get in free agency. And then 8.4 in 2016-17 is absolutely going to be a bargain at that point, given the TV money.
And only $500,000 of that is guaranteed. So, you know, I was looking at a team like Washington as well. You know, I mean, John Wall's talked about getting a stretch four and all that. But, you know, a team like Washington, you know, they could take Ersan, have him for a year. If they, you know, want to go after Kevin Durant, I mean, they can basically get rid of Ersan's salary for basically nothing in 2016. Or if they don't, they can keep him for another year at, as you said, a pretty good price. So, so I think, you know, there are definitely some potential fits out there for Ersan. But, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, he's, you know, the Bucks drafted him in 2005. He spent 2 years in Barcelona after his rookie year. But, you know, it's pretty bonkers to think that, you know, this guy has been with the organization, or the organization's had his NBA rights for a decade now. And, you know, it seems like half that time, you know, as fans, we've been desperately trying to trade him, and yet he just keeps coming back every year.
He's a great player, too. Like, he's a very, very valuable player, in my opinion.
The thing is, people always sort of overlook him a little bit, because, I mean, he has this penchant for starting slowly. This year, it was really more injuries. He actually played well in kind of the December time frame. But, you know, he's had this penchant for being a second-half player, so you kind of get used to him being frustrating to start the season and then, you know, hitting 45 or 50% of his threes after the All-Star break and putting up really good numbers. And, you know, he's really struggled against the Bulls, which I think, you know, hopefully opposing teams didn't really notice as much. But yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, his ability to stretch the floor, you know, be a scrappy defender, he's not a great defender by any stretch, but, you know, he's scrappy and, you know, takes charges and works hard. You know, he's definitely, I mean, there aren't that many guys like him, so hopefully there would be some interest if you try to move him, because he's certainly been productive, and people, even other than Knight, he led the Bucks in points per minute last year, so it's kind of easy to forget what he's done, but he's obviously been a pretty good player for them.
Yeah, you know, it's like kind of crazy, when you look at his skill package, he's the kind of guy that, you know, he crashes the offensive boards reasonably well, despite being a stretch four. He gets a reasonable amount of defensive rebounds. He passes well. He almost never turns the ball over. Like, it's a strange package of skills, but it's one that's getting more and more valuable around the league, is you can continue to use fours that can really handle the ball on the perimeter, or just make strong decisions on the perimeter, and use them to not necessarily initiate your offense, but start to find other options throughout your offense. It's something of, I want to say that Zach Lowe's the person who discussed it, like a playmaking four.
Right.
As opposed to a more traditional stretch four. And Ersan's one of those guys that really can do that.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, is where he plays as well. You know, he's a guy he's not a guy you park in the corner and shoot threes. He's a kind of pick-and-pop type guy. Mm-hmm. He tends to occupy sort of the elbows and top of the key, kind of running screening action. And one thing that kind of a subtle thing that I didn't like was, you know, when he's doing that and he's on the floor with a guy like Giannis, then you're not running those types of actions for Giannis. And you know, Giannis developed surprisingly into, and he shot 45% from mid-range in the second half, you know, from January on. And he, you know, became more of a weapon there, you know, whether, you know, either pick and pop or they switch, and then he gets the ball ISO'd at the top against a smaller guy. So, you know, that's kind of another subtle thing that, you know, when you've got Ersan on the court, he tends to limit using Giannis in that sense, and you know, look, Jabari is probably going to be used in the exact same way. So you know, it's not a shot on Ersan's abilities or what he's done for the team. It's more just, you know, it's kind of looking big picture and fit. If those guys are taking, you know, many or most of the team's power forward minutes, then you know, I think Ersan's value, certainly his productivity, he's just probably not going to play as much next year.
With the two teams you guys mentioned, and in between when I tried to rudely interrupt both of you, sorry about that. I apologize. But the Wizards, I think, really makes the most sense. I mean, they've been using Drew Gooden in that role when they've won, or gone small with Otto Porter, and Ilyasova could play with Porter also, and you could use Porter at the three and still give them some of the same characteristics style-wise with either Gortat or Nene at center. The Suns, I don't think, makes as much sense because they already have Marcus Morris, who can kind of do some of those stuff, and it's cheap. They have Mark Keefe, who's going to get a lot of time at the four. For them, what they want in their shooting stretch big, I think you want an ability to play center so he can fluctuate between the four and the five. That's what makes the most sense from their roster perspective. I really like the fit with the Wizards. I think that would make
so
a ton of sense.
Yeah,
let's make it happen.
Honestly, if you think about it, 19, which is the pick the Wizards have for Ursan, is not at all like a bad trade by any means. You would be lucky to get a player like Ursan for, two more years, I guess? You'd be lucky to get a player like Ursan for 2 years out of that 19th overall pick.
Yeah, and I'll just say, I won't say much, but I'll just say stay tuned to the SB Nation mock draft, because we may be foreshadowing a little bit. But anyway, yes, I agree.
Penny is very excited. So let's shift more to the pick, given that we've talked for like 25 minutes about the Bucks, because they're such a fun team, I think, and their future is going to be awesome. Let's shift to the pick and talk about, what do you like? What are you looking for in this draft pick?
You know, I think we've heard the team, you know, there's been talk of the team being interested in either a shooter or, you know, kind of a big guy who can, you know, give them some more depth up front, which, you know, maybe is kind of an allusion to what we've been discussing as far as trying to maybe, you know, not be committed to guys like Ursan and Henson long term.
What, being a guy that is long and has positional versatility, it's not like they ever draft guys like that.
exactly. So I think, you know, when you look at the names that we've heard them working out, you know, I mean, we've heard, you know, names like Bobby Portis, Kevon Looney, Dustin Anderson, to mention Jerian Grant. I think those are the only guys, you know, in terms of, and RJ Hunter as well, those are the only guys that have been mentioned as possibly coming in for workouts, and, you know, guys that they interviewed in Chicago as well. And so there's a pretty, you know, I mean, there's no kind of common thread there as far as, you know, position goes. I think, you know, they've obviously had, you know, if you look at their history, they've typically just said, hey, let's just take a guy that we think is going to be really good. And, you know, they drafted Henson when they had Larry Sanders and Epe Udo and Samuel D'Alembert. And, you know, Giannis was obviously just kind of a who knows what this guy will be type pick as well. So I think, you know, I don't think they're necessarily going to be driven too much by the fit question. But I do think, you know, when you look at, you know, certainly a guy like Portis, you know, the fact that he can probably play some five in addition to obviously, the, you know, be having good size for the four spot, I think that's the kind of guy that, you know, certainly could make a lot of sense and actually get some minutes for them. You know, Looney is a bit different. You know, obviously, he's a long guy. He's actually a Milwaukee native, so there'd be that kind of nice story as well. But he's obviously a really long guy with positional versatility, so he kind of fits the blueprint a little bit that way. Obviously, the fact that he, you know, has shown some potential as a three-point shooter, as a floor stretcher is also pretty interesting, you know, especially if you're thinking about, well, you know, we're going to maybe get rid of Ursan Ilyasova, or he's not going to be around, you know, more than the next year or two. I think Looney's a really interesting guy there, especially given that, you know, he's obviously has a lot of defensive versatility and maybe not a ton of offensive upside, but he's obviously still very young. So I think, you know, those two guys are probably the guys that I've thought the most about and as potentially being of interest. I was very disappointed to hear Bobby Portis was off the board when I'd be joining you guys in the mock draft you guys are doing. But but I think those guys are interesting. And, you know, I mean, you know, other than that, I think, you know, I kind of like Jerian Grant all year. But then kind of like when I was thinking about, like, what's kind of the realistic, you know, outcome for something like that, I started thinking, he's probably more Keon Dueling than, you know, Brandon Knight, if I'm going to look at, like, former Bucks, you know. I mean, he's probably not going to be, you know, this dynamic, you know, guy who's dunking on people and, you know, using that size to become an elite player. I mean, that's why these guys are available to slate in draft. I think DeLon Wright really interests me. I don't think the Bucks have necessarily shown much interest in him, but I think DeLon Wright's just a total weirdo who's, you know, put up, you know, his projections, his physical pride projections look awesome, even though he's, you know, an old player and he's 23 already. You know, you probably would bring a lot of the same things that Carter Williams does as far as being a distributor who's not a great shooter and a versatile defender, but he's kind of, you know, an interesting guy if you kind of move down in the draft a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, you guys know the draft better than I do. I mean, are there other guys that you kind of look at and say those guys would be potential good fits? I mean, as I said, Kaminsky and Tark Turner are sort of my dream scenario. If you were somehow able to trade up, as you know, you guys mentioned, maybe some possibility there. But I think looking at the kind of range that the Bucks are going to be in, I'm trying to be more realistic. I think RJ Hunter kind of interests me as well. But, you know, obviously he's probably not going to be, he might be a little bit of a stretch at 17, but kind of in the big picture long term, never bad to have another guy who's a potential versatile shooter and scorer, potentially to replace OJ Mayo when he comes off the books.
Yeah, I'd mention a couple other names. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I believe you said. He's a guy that'll be around this range. He's gone in our mock draft already, but he's, you know, he's another one of those guys. He's going to be able to play a bunch of different positions defensively. I want to say that, you know, Jason Kidd and Sean Sweeney would love him. Like, they'd be able to just kind of throw him out there immediately, and he'd be able to guard 2 through 4. Just because of that's the way he is, that's what he cares about. He really tries to get after it defensively. The second guy, or actually I guess there are a few other guys, I would also mention Sam Dekker. Dekker intrigues me for them because, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of him. I don't know what he does right now on an NBA level beyond just knowing how to move and having a high basketball IQ. But sometimes that's enough. If you can improve the jump shot, he's the kind of guy that can really, really help you out, you know, on offense, because he can guard probably both 3s and 4s, at least marginally as he's going to due to his size. I know you mentioned DeLon Wright. That's an interesting one. You mentioned Justin Anderson at the top of that little blurb. I like Anderson for them too. I think he's another guy, you know, guard 2 through 4s like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, can really shoot. And then the final guy I would say is Christian Wood. He kind of fits their MO as far as, you know, positional versatility, long guys. I'm not as high on him. I don't know that the Bucks would be as high on him because he's still a fairly big project, I would say. But hey, they've gone projects in the past. They don't really have a problem developing them. He'd need to work on his body, his lower body strength particularly. But he's another guy that, you know, if you got rid of Ersan, he's the kind of guy that can morph into a maybe a little bit more versatile defensively Ersan if he can really work on the jump shot.
Yeah, and I think the interesting, you know, guys like Dekker, who obviously there's the obvious Wisconsin connection. And
right.
I'm sure that would, you know, you'd get some more Badger fans to watch games if you had a guy like Dekker. I think Dekker and Anderson, obviously they're different types of players, but I think, you know, I look at those guys, I think the thing that sort of turns me off to them, and it's not to say that the Bucks would pass on them for this reason, but I think the fact that, you know, as athletic as Anderson is, as much as he shot the lights out, you know, especially for that 2-month stretch last season, you know, he doesn't really jump off the page to me when I've watched games. He hasn't really jumped off paged me as like this phenomenal athlete with all this upside, and so I think given his age, you know, even mid to late first round, I still have this, you know, nagging thing that I want to pick a guy who has, you know, who's, I'd much rather take sort of the weird guy with potential than, you know, the kind of, you know, well, he'll be a pretty decent rotation player type guy, which I think is more, you know, I think Anderson and Dekker are more those types of guys that I don't necessarily see those guys having the, you know, sort of potential that, you know, even a guy like, you know, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, you mentioned, you know, given his athleticism, you know, if you had a shooting coach that could work wonders with him, he's obviously a guy that could be, could provide you a lot of surface value relative to picking somebody, you know, in the 17 to 25 range where he might fall. So, so I think that's, you know, those are always sort of my personal sort of leanings is to go with the guy. Maybe I'm over-indexing on the Giannis experience, obviously, but you know, I'm not gonna you know, go totally crazy. After the Larry Sanders experience, I'm not gonna say that the Bucks should draft Robert Upshaw or something like that. But but I can certainly see the appeal of guys like that or Wood as well. I think Wood. I didn't know much at all about Wood during the season. I only really kind of started to look into him after the season because I didn't watch any other MLB games, but he's certainly a guy, as you said, and he even said in Chicago that he actually models himself a bit after Giannis, given that, you know, they're both kind of these really long guys, tall guys who, you know, have some small abilities and can do some things that, you know, your typical 6'10", 6'11" guy can't do.
I like Looney in this spot. When he came out to his son's workout, Jeff Hornacek specifically talked about how he understands how to use his length defensively, and when he closes out, he has good balance and he doesn't overreact to things. That would seem to be a very good fit in what the Bucks want to do defensively.
Yeah, I'm just going to mention one thing. It kind of bothers me that Looney has gotten, you know, a couple people have mentioned this and they've said that he's kind of a low motor guy. That bothers me because he's not at all. You know, I watched him all year. I've talked to him. I've written probably 5,000 words on the guy this year. He's not at all a low motor guy. You can trust him to come in, work hard, and he's going to continue to work on his body, and he's going to continue to really improve his game and improve the strength that he has on his like pretty slight frame right now. And I've seen it a couple different places, and that kind of bugs me a little bit because it makes me think that these guys haven't really been watching him this year. I've seen it from like reputable sources.
He has
or like reputable places.
He has pretty broad shoulders. He should be able to put some more weight on to his frame. My biggest concern with him is how he takes his jumper. Right? That he needs to. He could clean it up. He could clean it up a little bit and make it a little more smooth. I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah. Oh, if you chat with Looney, like if you were standing right next to him, I'm stood right next to him, like talk to him for 10 minutes at a time, it's just his body is freaky. Like broad shoulders, arms that go down to his knees, like it just is one of those bodies you don't see often. And I imagine it's the same with Giannis, having never stood next to Giannis, I imagine it's a similar situation.
Yeah, he's one of the guys, you know, you don't normally stand next to someone who you're afraid could just envelop your entire body if they really wanted to. But
that's the same way.
Yeah, Looney's also interesting because he has sort of like high shoulders. You know, like it seems like his head and neck are not as like he should be taller almost. Like he doesn't have like much neck, even though he's not obviously a thick guy. But it's funny because I didn't watch Portis much as a freshman, but you know I remember seeing his numbers. I think he was listed at like 6'9", 220 as a freshman. And, you know, he was a guy that obviously, I think he put up like 12 and 7 or something like that, some numbers kind of like that. And, you know, it's a little funny now looking at Looney because, you know, Looney, I think he's like 6'9", 6'10 in shoes, 222. I think he might, you know, weighed out at, you know, neither guy is a phenomenal athlete, but they have obviously some skill. They have some ability to shoot the ball. I think, you know, worried me a little bit when I was looking at Looney's numbers. He shot, I think, 41-42% from three, but fairly low volume, and his two-point jump shooting, I think, was like 33%. Is you know from the foul line, I think he was around 62%. So I'm a little worried that some of those kind of other numbers that can kind of you know hint at a guy's you know shooting touch and where he might go eventually as a shooter were not as strong as his you know really good three-point shooting numbers. But you know he's certainly a guy. I mean, obviously, you know as a his rebounding numbers, and I would agree. You know, look at what he does on the offensive board. It's hard to do what he does at his size. Without having a good motor, right? I mean, it doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense. So I think that and the fact that both those guys, you know, can you know, switch in defense and handle smaller players and they can run up and down the court. I think there was some concern, I think, about, you know, Looney's asthma actually maybe being an issue. But I don't know. You hear about that so rarely nowadays with modern medicine. I assume that's probably not a major red flag. But both guys, I think, are really interesting. And, you know, as I said, I think Portis would probably be the guy I'd go, you know, first off. I mean, he's a year older. I think we have a little bit more sense of who he is as a player and a bit more polished offensively and certainly scored at a higher volume than Looney did last year. But I think, you know, look, given where the Bucks are, I think, you know, they have more or less a full roster as is. I don't think they're drafting a guy to plug in and you know, give him 25 or 30 minutes a game. And obviously, Looney's not going to do that next year. He's going to be, I don't know if you call him a project, but he's going to be, you know, a multi-year guy that you're trying to develop. And, you know, hey, if one day, you know, the Bucks roll out, you know, MCW, Giannis, Jabari, Damian Inglis, and Kevon Looney, you know, maybe we'll have finally reached the future of basketball. That could be a fun, weird experiment, maybe 3 or 4 years from now.
And you think, I'd say in normal years that with a draft that doesn't have this type of depth, Looney's probably the type of player at his age and his measurements and the skills that he showed that probably goes in the lottery.
Yeah, I would say so. Last year, I think that Looney probably would have gone in the lottery. I definitely would have gone in the lottery in 2013, right? That's that draft, yeah, 2013. That's the year that came before the last one. But yeah, you look at a guy like, you know, TJ Warren doesn't really have the measurables you're looking for in an NBA player, but has, like, the intelligence levels. Adrian Payne, kind of the opposite there. Doug McDermott, I would guess that Looney would go ahead of Doug McDermott. I would have taken Looney ahead of Noah Vonleh, but I don't really like Noah Vonleh that much.
Neither do the Hornets, apparently.
I think Noah Vonleh did something to your family, Sam.
He's just not. I'm not a fan. Like, in 2013, I think Looney is probably, like, the eighth best guy in that draft. Like, after you get past that initial, that was like a seven-person draft for most people. Just that tier ending at McLemore at seven. I think Looney goes, like, right after that in that draft. So, yeah, I think that you're looking at definitely a lottery guy in most drafts, but this one's pretty strong. And his draft stock just ended up taking a tumble for reasons that, you know, were a little bit out of his control. He hurt his hip. Just little stuff like that. It ended up just harming him a little bit more than probably should have been.
Frank, so go ahead.
We didn't really talk about Hunter, and he's been linked to the Bucks a fair bit. He's one of the guys coming in for a workout. I'm just wondering kind of what your take is on him at 17, maybe a bit of a reach, I think, based on your last mock. But be curious to hear you talk a little bit about him and his potential.
Well,
a team like the Bucks.
I don't necessarily know that he's a reach there. I mean, I had him at 16 in the last mock draft. It's just like, it depends on what team needs are at that range. Like, the Rockets, I mean, the Raptors, the Bulls, like, those teams probably aren't going to take Hunter, I would say, just because they don't really need him. But, you know, the Celtics, the Bucks, the Cavs, 24 is a pretty good landing spot for him. Those are the kind of guys, those are the kind of teams where Hunter, I don't think, is really a reach. He's a really, really smart player, really sharp kid. It shows in how he attacks his, how he moves off ball, how he can kind of get into the lane on ball, how he finds space for his jumper. I would not pay attention to the 30% number, considering he probably took half of his three-point shots from 28-ish feet, I would say. So that's a number that I wouldn't get too concerned about. But I'm a fan of his for a team that'll use him as just a spot-up shooter that'll move off ball well and then attack closeouts. Defensively, it's going to be a little bit more of a adventure, we'll say. We'll say adventure because his father was his coach at Georgia State, obviously, and they played a 2-3 matchup zone, 1-3-1 matchup zone, like just a bunch of different little variations on matchup zones. And Hunter's job just basically ended up being to roam around and kind of wreak havoc with his length. Because he has a 6'10 wingspan. So I wouldn't necessarily get excited about him defensively. But again, that's a guy that kind of fits their MO, long arms. Some athleticism. He's a very functional athlete, I would say. Very fluid. But I don't think that's a reach for the Bucks at 17, honestly.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, watching film with him, you know, you're really struck by how many, you know, 25-foot contested three-pointers, you know, off the dribble he shoots.
Right.
And, you know, if you could somehow bake degree of difficulty into that percentage, I think, you know, on the other extreme, a guy like Justin Anderson, from what I can tell, you know, is taking pretty much just, you know, balanced catch-and-shoot type threes and
yep.
just burying them like, you know, like nobody's business. You know, it's a very different type of thing versus what RJ was doing. And I'm curious, you know, it'll be interesting because obviously his role in the NBA is not going to be as a number one scoring option. So I think that's always interesting to see those guys make that transition from, you know, being a guy who's blanketed defensively and the defense is focusing on, and, you know, you feel like you have to get 20 points a night to a guy who's going to get, you know, at least early in his career, 10, 15 minutes. He's maybe going to get three shots, and, you know, can you hit two out of three on most nights versus one out of three or zero out of three? That's, you know, how you have to add value. So
yeah.
So I think he's really interesting. And I think the fact that his assist rate went up a lot last year, I think, was also a bit encouraging. I mean, obviously he had some chucker tendencies, but I haven't scouted him as much as you guys have, but it does seem to sound like he developed some kind of pick and roll. I don't know if you'd say instincts. You only develop instincts, but he at least has some, maybe more of that than he showed the previous year. So I think he's definitely an interesting player. But I'm always highly skeptical. I have a long running skepticism of shooting guards, just because, you know, there just aren't very many good ones in the league. And I think, you know, usually there's a reason they're a shooting guard, not a point guard, or not a small forward. Usually it's like that weird spot where, like, you can shoot a little bit, you can't necessarily create off the dribble. Not a great passer, you're not big enough to play a different position, and so you're a shooting guard. But anyway, we'll see.
And Frank, who are you going to? I'm pretty sure we know who you're picking, but if you want to just make it official.
Sure, I will, on behalf of the Bucks, I will select the local kid makes good, Kevon Looney.
Good stuff. You have anything you want to plug and get out there before we wrap this up?
No, we'll be doing our usual, you know, pre-draft coverage, and obviously we're doing a lot of other stuff. We just have the new jerseys come out. We've got lots of arena stuff, lots of political coverage that we're having to do, which is a bit different than we might normally want to do on a basketball site. But we've definitely got a lot of stuff going with that, and certainly looking forward to maybe an active pre-draft period, and then obviously free agency as well.
Good stuff, Frank. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, that wraps up another edition of the Amateur Hour Podcast Mock Draft.